Well, our lesson today is about Gentiles. Not completely, but Gentiles get their day in court. Sometimes we are, I have been told, that we're so Jewish-minded that we forget about the Gentiles. And I think that's true, because the Bible is a Jewish book. But the Jewish book talks about Gentiles. After all, the Gentiles make up the bulk of humanity, always have and always will. So they're not ignored by the Lord. In fact, the Gentiles get their day in court today in chapter 47, giving up eschatological evidence in Isaiah. But this chapter is a little bit of deviation, not big, but a little deviation. And I put this up here because I'll send this to you, and you always have a chance to look at this at your computers, a little more time at home. But this is our timeline that we're suggesting is true. And I spent a lot of time last night thinking about the kingdom again. It don't go away in my mind. And I'm on the right track with this because I have text for it. So this kind of stuff comes out of that whole discussion. It starts with what is the kingdom and what is not the kingdom. So anyway, that's what we're doing in the long run, but we have a little pause today. Remember, Isaiah is about the Jewish promise made to Abraham. So we call Isaiah is our prophetic book. It has history in it, but it's a prophetic book. It's a major prophet, the major prophet, I might add. So prophet Isaiah speaks from a 8th century B.C. time frame. So we need to understand that because it's in that history that this prophecy is given. So we have to have some understanding of that period, which we've done in the past. It's facing the Syrian captivity, living through the Syrian captivity, and anticipating the Babylonian captivity. And overall, it's anticipating the eschaton, the end of all things for the Jews, the world, what we call the end of the world. So that's what it does. So Isaiah recognized the balance of humanity, that is the Gentiles, who are also a concern of God because he owns them too, because he made them. And probably all of us sitting here, and there's always an exception that somebody has Jewish backgrounds, but we're all sitting here probably as Gentiles. We're in the time of the Gentiles, and the Gentiles are in charge. I should have put that up there. The Gentiles are in charge today, along with the prince of the air who rules in dark from the darkness. So chapter 41 is about the Gentiles. It addresses them, exposing the folly of their way, that they should embrace the God of Israel who demonstrably acts on their behalf. So Israel is supposed to be that missionary agency in the world that if you want to become related to God or know him or he knows you, you have to go to Israel to get that information. So there, God holds himself out through the people of the Israelites that I am their God, and they should be an attractive light for you to come to me through Israel. Now, we know they fail, but that's the pattern for the Old Testament. So since we live in a Gentile world today, the text says a lot about the Gentiles of our time and the futility of their approach to life. There's so much I could say here. We just look outside, and the world is approaching everything with quite a high sense of futility, don't they? But they're so proud that we know what we're doing. So they worshipped and served the creature rather than the creator. Now, these are the Gentiles in the book of Romans, chapter 1. It has never ceased to do. They have never ceased to do that. Here we have Daniel and his friends not going to bow down to an image made on behalf of Nebuchadnezzar. So our lesson really is about idolatry. So remember in our past three lessons, we had the big announcement to Israel, says to be comforted. It says, comforted, comforted ye my people. And we're at the hinge point of where God goes from a condemning message to a saving message. And we find that Isaiah is a saving Israel book. Remember, saving Israel. Chapter 46 through 31 addressed Israel, comparing men as grass with God. And God always wins because grass always dies. It withers, it goes away. But God always stands. And we know about God because we have his word. All right? right? So we compare God's word with man's word, and man as grass always withers. Then we have Isaiah 41 addressing the Gentiles, showing God's supreme power over all people, the Gentiles of the earth. So we have the message about God's ability to bring about justice, and how God's power will show that nations and their gods have no power. Again, it's a competing of these two forces or contending forces. Ooh, just jump into the text. The first word is coastlands, and it's always a little bit confusing because sometimes the idea of islands are used in this context. It's, in other words, those outlying places from Israel, not Israel itself. So you almost can think of it like Israel is the nation, and all the other nations are islands. And I think that probably these islands extend out further than Assyria and Babylon and Greece and Egypt. So I'm talking about unnamed nations, call them islands, you know, the political islands, whatever. These are the geographical edges of Israel. So coastlands, in other words, Gentiles here, listen to me in silence. Remember I said last time that God tells man to shut up and sit down? That's kind of that's what he's saying here. Be quiet and sit down, okay? And let the people gain new strength. Now, these people here are the Gentiles. This is very confusing when you get into poetry, and we don't have the bright minds like the Hebrews do. So when they read this poetry, they understand it. When us Gentiles, it's Occidentals, we read these, we get all confused. So it's a little confusing to know who's talking about when and who's speaking. So the Lord says to the Gentiles, listen to me in silence. Now he says to those people, let the peoples gain new strength, these Gentiles, courage to come and speak, like is it here in a courtroom. Let them come forward and let them speak. Let us come together for judgment. In other words, okay, I'll give you a fair shake. God says to them, I want you to present your case. Let's come together for judgment, all right? And what the best the Gentiles can do? Well, these Gentiles, these are the ones who rouse one from the east, whom he calls in righteousness to his feet. Now, there is a confusing statement there. He calls in righteousness to his feet. So I went to my commentary, my Gary Smith commentary, and he says that the best you can do with this, and it fits the context, he who arouses one from the east, who meets or encounters victory as he goes. In other words, these Gentiles are successful in the political realm. Okay? So the best they have, the Gentiles, that these Gentiles deliver up nations before him, like you have a Hitler, or you have a Stalin, or you have a Mussolini, who's the guys out of the World War II. He delivers up nations before him and subdues kings and makes them like dust with his sword, as the wind-driven chaff with his bow. This is not God. This is humanity doing this. He delivers up the nation. Okay, these are the Gentiles now, these despotic rulers. They deliver up nations before him. He subdues the kings. He makes them like dust with his sword. Can you imagine Stalin here, or Hitler, as the wind-driven chaff with his bow? So it could be a reference to Assyria, which is the nearby one, or any reference to a despotism. See, this is what the Gentiles have to offer. So the Gentile despots, what else do they pursue them, passing on in safety by a way he has not traversed with his feet? So we think, oh, this is kind of like referring to Stalin, Hitler, Alexander the Great particularly, which is still way in the future. Nebuchadnezzar was still in the future. Nero was still in the future. But this is all the Gentiles can do. But behind all this is the question, who actually did this? So here we shift to God's accomplishments. And verse 4 says, who has performed and accomplished it? That is calling forth the generation from the beginning. Calling forth the generations from the beginning. In other words, making predictions about the generations. And it says, I, the Lord, am the first and the last. I am he. We have this I am statement we get out of John, claiming the deity. So God is the one that accomplishes this, even though men are doing these things. So Gentile opposition to God is motivation for their cooperation. So the Gentiles don't sit by and, you know, just let things happen to them. They cooperate with each other because, after all, this is a serious issue. So Gentile opposition to God is motivation for their cooperation. But when the Gentiles cooperate together, they do that out of fear. And it generates fear. The coastlands, Gentiles, have seen God's work and are afraid. Now, this is the Bible talking. These nations have seen God's work and they are afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near and have come together for power. So this fear drives them to some kind of unifying effort. Verse 6, each one helps his neighbor and says to his brother, be strong. And I say in their speeches, you know, we have to get together. We have to cooperate, do things together. All right, so we have this opposition to God is basically driven by fear. And, you know, there's a lot of anti-Semitism in the world, and a lot of it is because you look at what God has done to Israel, and your mind connects to the God of Israel is not to be contended with, so there is a fear. So when there's a fear, there's a reaction to it. What we have with Gentiles, they have a reaction to this fear, and they get together. So a man's feeble efforts expressed in third world terms. I think this still works as third world terms. Verse 7, so the craftsman encourages the smelter, and he who smooths metal with a hammer encourages him who beats the anvil, saying to the soldering, it is good. And he fastens it with nails so that it does not totter. Well, today, in our world, these idols are now expressions of art, right, in our country. But today, idols come in different, in the West here, in different non-material expressions. Since the Enlightenment, we have the idolatry of the human idea or the human person or man, the measure of all things. That goes back to the Enlightenment and the erection of David, you know, Michelangelo's 8-foot David. Man is everything. So it goes back to this. And now we have funding these kind of efforts, the endowments of the art, money given to the people that can make these expressions, because these expressions are where our ideas for life come from. It comes from our artists. We cannot squelch the artists because they're the ones, now we're talking about Gentiles here, the Gentiles say the artists are the place where real good ideas come from. It doesn't matter, you know, the story about the crucifix and the bottle of urine. That's okay because it's just part of the process we're going through. And we'll fund those arts because there's a product at the end that we need. Well, an example of man's feeble efforts is now expressed in new world terms. The World Economic Forum is such an idea, a think tank that intends to preserve the present generation. Notice it's always the present generation we're preserving. By producing a life-changing culture while destroying the next generation. Never worry about the next generation. We know that because they're so pro-abortion. And they'll realize, they do, should realize that that destroys the next generation. Well, they don't care about the next generation. They're just worried about this generation. So the modern day, the World Economic Forum, rather than confront, it exacts primordial basic fear and rage. You know, I've always noticed about the liberals, they are never very happy about anything. They're always scared to death. They're worried that something's going to happen and their life's going to fall apart. And they're right. They should be. So the more they talk about their own ideas, the more fear they engender. And more fear, then fear that are not assuaged then turns to rage. Now, these fears are stoked by the meetings of at Davos, Switzerland, attended by the very rich and influential. We're talking about Gentile idolatry. Don't lose track of what we're doing here. It takes to get into this meeting or join this club, it takes $750,000, $750,000 to join. And if you're going to go attend this place, you got to pay another $29,000 to attend. And many arrive in their private jets. And much of this is funded by economist turned philosopher Klaus Schwab. Now, that's not Charles Schwab, you know, of the investment. So this is a different guy. This is a German guy. But that's a picture of him. Anyway, Klaus Schwab, during the dark days of COVID lockdowns in 2021, Schwab, the World Economic Forum, sent chills worldwide with an ominous prediction via social media that by 2030, you'll own nothing and you'll be very happy. The idea that having things makes you unhappy. So we take things away from you so you'll be happy. Stand that one on your head. Well, we have others like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Wellcome Trust have been major donors to the World Economic Forum. Another rich and influential player that facilitates this idolatry is Mark Benioff. Benioff, is that how you say his word? From Salesforce is his company, who championed the idea of using business to shape culture, weaponized business to shape culture. Since the government cannot legally directly act in that role, sympathetic businesses can do what government cannot do. And you have not noticed that. You have been sleeping. Today, big business monopolies are more to be feared than government itself. Think of business giants and that set our communication limits, manage our purchases. Remember, we talked about how close we are to a digital-free or cash-free society. It's all digital. I mean, there's discussion even today, this week, about the Federal Reserve going to digital. And when you do that, you have no way. I mean, they have every way to control everything you do about your spenders because everything's got to go through some kind of credit system. You walk with a credit card, you have to buy a cup of coffee. If that credit card is denied, you can't buy a cup of coffee. You don't have cash to buy a cup of coffee because using cash is probably, in time, will be illegal. You have to just use the digital stuff. So we're heading in that direction. Now remember, these are the idolaters building an idol. Okay, the big business monopolies today are more feared than government itself. Think of the business giants that set our communications limitations, manage our purchases, control the information gathering systems, which is all the media, Facebook, all those different systems. And the investment banks, such as the, SEG, S stands for social, E stands for economic, and G stands for governance. So social, economic, governance. So these companies now are going to govern our life. BlackRock, you see them advertised on Fox even. Benioff owns Time Magazine. And so this stuff is all owned by this group. And by the way, these are the idolaters. They're worshiping an image that is of their construct. So what do they do? Well, this last year we have theme one. It's interesting that the Ukraine war sheds light on the importance of global cooperation. So they used the Ukraine war as an example how we really can all get together. Now we see that the Republicans and the Democrats all support nearly all support the Ukraine war. And you go back, well, where did this start from? And you go back and say, it started from nothing. It just started with Russia didn't want to have a Western nation on their border. They didn't want Ukraine to join NATO. That was it. And our present administration pushed the point, you know, like poke the stick in their eye. So no, Ukraine should be part of, and to put that set Putin and Russia, you know, off. So now when a war occurs, then we can all get together and fight the same war because it's against Russia. Well, anyway, that's one of the objects. Number two was three interconnected crises of climate, food, and energy. And by the way, these crises are often manufactured. You take a certain kind of statistic and then you wrap it around a, you know, a light pole, and then you end up with a hockey stick growth of something. It's just all manufactured. So other things here, we've got to get rid of this. There. Preparing for the next pandemic requires ending health disparities. So that's another issue. The World Health Organization wants to make sure that everybody gets treated with their treatment equally. So then we have issues like gender inequality and jobs of tomorrow. And on the bottom here, we have sustainable development goals. Ecosystems are vital to the survival of the web of life, and to human beings are at risk. For 42 years, Al Gore says, I have focused on the climate and I have always felt that it is intrinsically related to nature. Yeah, think about that a little bit. It sounds like our vice president made such a statement. The yellows are the school buses. Okay. So the Davos man, you know, comes out of this, almost becomes an idol, the Davos man. A reference to the annual World Economic Forum meeting has become a common metonym for a certain, I don't know what that word is, by Benson, liberal, trendy, environmentalist, redistributionist ideology, because that is the technocratic ideology that impins the World Economic Forum. All that to say is they have got themselves quite a club going here and is amazingly powerful. Some more we have on the topic of people like Yeager, this Bill Gates, Greta Thunberg. She's a gal that refused to fly an airplane because it was polluting the world, so she sailed on a yacht to New York. She was 16. Now she becomes an expert in climate change. She's now 20, 21. I mean, what has that girl got to say about anything? So it draws a curious blend of celebrities, heads of state, and so forth. I told you about the ultra-rich go there and so forth. So on the bottom, we have BlackRock. They invest only in sustainable energy projects. If you're doing something that has to do with biofuels or whatever, or with fuels of the earth, we call them natural fuels, then they don't fund that. So in a way, they control the development. Okay, so this becomes idol worship, really, of the natural world, which I really think is the unifying religion that we find in the tribulation. Sometimes we made the Catholic Church the unifying religion there. I think that it's Catholic Church is not big enough. It's big, but it's not big enough. But you get the whole world to support and worship nature. You have something going there. And I think that's what's my opinion. That's an opinion, by the way. So one idol, invest in the hope of man's independence. That's the idol, man's independence from who? God. We can do this all by myself, right? So we don't need to choose between an energy crisis and a climate crisis. We can solve both of them with the right investment. Put the money in the right place. That's BlackRock. BlackRock Investment is managing a company that controls $10 trillion dollars intending to shake the world with only sustainable energy investments. And some states have outlawed their business in their countries, or in their states, because of this narrowly funding certain things, and those things that ordinarily get funded, like building a gas station on the corner, they wouldn't fund that. So they're only into sustainable investing. Well, I was not able to sleep last night, so I got up and read the paper, and I noticed that Epic Times, it said that it has now been shown that we have come so far that the electric car costs more to run than a gas car does. But no one will ever know that. I don't care if you have an electric car, fine, just drive it. Okay, false hope in idols. There can be no doubt that these kind of idols are a modern form of idolatry. These people are worshiping an idol. Don't forget that. These idols are not fastened down with nails, so they do not totter, right? But they are fastened down with lies and falsehoods. They are fastened with lies and falsehoods, and they are layered upon layered. Since liars make the idols, no liar dares to call out another liar for fear of being caught himself. That's where our media is. The media lies as much as these other organizations do, and so they don't call each other out. Because they call each other out, they're also liars. So they're all into this idolatry. So we have this complacent press that will not hold liars accountable because they themselves lie. Just as a wooden idol has no power, these man-made idols, meant to dethrone the Creator God, has no power to improve life, but in every case makes life more difficult. Never notice that. They do not notice that, or don't make a point of it, because it would destroy their idol. There's no doubt that the elevation of man to the idol status drives the movers and shakers against the Christian West. It cannot be denied that the objective of this idolatrous thinking is for all, using intimidation or whatever it takes. And now we have weaponized the FBI and the CIA and the local, prosecuting attorneys to join the overthrowing God movement, these norms of our culture and our development, including the basic unit of the family. Everything has got to go. There's nothing sacred. It all has to be destroyed and built from the foundation up. How is it going to look? We don't know. But we do know that when it's done, it will be better. That is how they think. So computers and internet have made this a viable possibility for the first time in the human history. No one could even attempt it before. But now, with the control of your cash, like I said before, and we're going to get to the World Health Organization, with those two things, threat on your life and a threat on your economy, your basic ability to buy things, they can absolutely control everything that you do. And that's the objective. And remember, that's their idol. Let man be in charge. Put man in charge. God's warning against this in this text, by the way. So in case we lose track of where we're going. So every health, military, economic, social crisis, real or manufacturing, is used to advance this agenda. Do not let a crisis go to waste. We've heard that too many times. The World Health Organization is just one of these controlling NGOs, non-governmental offices, organizations that seek to control, by dictating health rules, the world's future. They know. Now, they never make a mistake. See, it would help a little bit if they, well, we did the best we could, but these are the mistakes we made. That would be fine. But they never make any mistakes. They just lie about the mistakes they made. See, that this idol is held up by lies. It cannot stand on its own. The World Health Organization is already gearing up for the next pandemic. I read that this last week, so that they are prepared for when it comes, that you will live, so that you will willingly surrender your freedoms to live. It is, after all, a life and death matter. That's why the health issue and your economics, those two things will control everybody. Because everybody wants to live. If you tell me if I take this pill or this shot or whatever, and I'll live, and if I don't, I'll die, I'll take the shot. I mean, that's how it goes. So the World Health Organization can use the next health issue to advance globalism. Another virus is bound to come. You can count on it. In fact, they've already planned for it. Recently, it was reported that some pharmaceuticals are experimenting with gain-of-function ideas, produce another crisis that will lead pharmaceutical remedies, that will need pharmaceutical remedies. You see it coming. This is what, that's what selfish people do. They create a market if they have to lie about it or even create a crisis. Nothing beyond them. However, now that we're all feared up, that's the idea, I want to get you really, 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 really scared. However, Isaiah reminds us not to fear these people or their movement, because we are assured that God of Israel also is also the God of the world, and his borders will not be compromised. He says, thus far you go, but no more. So the rule of life for us is we do what is right and allow the idol worships to imagine a vain thing. And they do that with supremacy. So here we have the eschatological statement about Israel. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, descendant of Abraham, my friend, you whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called from its remotest part and said to you, you are my servant, I have chosen you, I do not reject you. Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. Don't know who was the many enemy coming from. Don't worry about it. I'm your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous hand, Israel. Now, we're still not done with Israel. Behold, all those who are angered at you. Who's not been angry with Israel? I mean, it's anti-Semitism. Behold, all who are angered at you, my people, they will be ashamed and dishonored. Those who contend with you will be as nothing and will perish in the end. I add these little words to make it sense. Make sense. Smooth. In the end, you will seek those who quarrel with you, but you will not find them. Those who war with you will be as nothing, non-existent. They disappear. Remember, in the eschaton, when it's all over and done, there's nobody here supporting that attack Israel is even here anymore. For I am the Lord your God who upholds your right hand, who says to you, do not fear, I will help you. There's our message. Now that's for Israel. Do not fear, you worm Jacob. You're nothing, Jacob. I'm doing it all. You men of Israel, I will help you, declares the Lord, and your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. 15, behold, I have made you a new sharp threshing sledge with double edges. You will thresh the mountains and pulverize them and make the hills like chaff. Wow. That's Israel. Now, I have a hard time understanding what's being said here, because when I read the scriptures, I usually find that God does the fighting. God goes out with a sword. He does the sledgehamming. But here it says Israel will be. Well, I said maybe we don't know everything that God's going to do or how God is going to do it. But even in our time, we could say this about Israel, the nation. They have been a threshing sledge with double edges for their neighbors. Because every time a neighbor of Israel goes to war with them, they get pulverized. So is that what that's saying here? Well, that's probably a good example of it. So maybe God will use Israel in some ways, But in the Gog and Magog war, God does all the work. In the Battle of Armageddon, the ones we know about, God does all the work. So where this fits, I don't know. So maybe it fits just with what I said. For example, you tag Israel in the time of my blessing them, which is started already. They're back in the land. They have become like a sharp threshing sledge with double edges. And they will thresh the kingdoms that are around them. They'll pulverize them. They still haven't been able to attack or destroy Israel. Yep. All right. So, is this a glimpse of the present miraculous saving of Israel? Question mark. I don't know. I would say it's a possibility. So, it goes on to say, you, Israel, will winnow them. And the wind will carry them away, and the storm will scatter them, and you will rejoice in the Lord and the glory of the Holy One of Israel. Then that is true. When it's all said and done, they're gone. All right, now here it looks like Israel actually has a role in that process. Okay, so in the eschaton, Israel is compared with the present. Here we go into the future. Now the afflicted and the needy are seeking water, but there is none. And if you think about their life in exile, and the tongue is parched with thirst, then I, the Lord, will answer them myself. As the God of Israel, I will not forsake them. And then it goes to eschatological. Then I will open the rivers. This is now into the eschaton. I will open the rivers of the bare heights and springs in the midst of the valley. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, dry lands fountains of water. I will put cedars in the wilderness, acacia in the myrtle, and the olive tree. I will place the juniper in the desert together with the box tree and the cypress. In other words, the desert will bloom. We've heard that before. In the eschatology, then, that they may see and recognize the Gentiles, and consider and gain insight as well that the land of the Lord has done this, and the Holy One of Israel has created it. We're in the day of the Lord. While a new created desert is mentioned, more fully and widely stated in Isaiah 65:17, where it says, behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth. Well, with such evidence, God cares for his chosen people in the eschaton. A challenge to the Gentiles again. Present your case. The Lord says, bring forward your strong arguments, the king of Jacob says. So, okay, here's the test. Tell us, oh, Gentiles, tell us the future, El Gore. All these other guys, don't pick on him. All these guys, tell us the future. And they have told us a number of times that in 12 years, we're all going to be dead. They said that back in the 1990s. And they keep saying it. Or little, whatever person is that goes by three letters. You're going to be dead in 10 years, 12 years, whatever. Well, tell us the future. Let them bring forth and declare to us what is going to take place. As for the former events, declare what they were. In other words, could you have done this before? Did you predict something that happened now? That we may consider them and know their outcome or announce what is coming? In other words, can we depend on you what you said before? Obvious answer is no. So testing it. Go ahead. Declare the things that are going to come afterward, that we may know that you are gods. You know, only gods can know the future. So go ahead and do it. Because if you do, you'll be gods. Indeed, do something, even do whether it's good or evil. Just do anything that we may anxiously look about us and fear together. But there is silence. They don't say anything. The Gentiles are quiet. They're mute. And the score, behold, you are of no account, Gentile, and your work amounts to nothing. This has to do with these EGOs and all these other things that are trying to control the things. They are nothing. He who chooses your side is an abomination. In other words, you join this group, it's an abomination. Stay away from them. The Lord says, I have aroused one from the north, and he has come. And from the rising of the sun, he will call my name on my name. And he will come upon rulers as upon mortar. Even, you know, mortar, smashing like you get for pills. Even the potter treads clay. This could be reference to Gog and Magog and Armageddon. We don't know. It says, I have roused from the north and one from the east. You have Russia from the north, and we have East China, apparently, from the east. So maybe that's a reference to that. And they end up in Armageddon. Gog first, then Armageddon, the two different wars. Who has declared this from the beginning? You know, who has declared this from the beginning when it happens? That we might know, or for the former things that we might say, he is right. But God speaking about them, surely there was no one who declared a prophecy. Surely there was no one who proclaimed. Surely there was no one who heard your words. In the end, all your words are ignored. They ignore God's word, and they listen to man's word, and man's word never does anything. Formerly I said to Zion, behold, here they are, the Syrians, and to Jerusalem I will give a messenger, like prophets, of good news. But when I look among the nations, there is none, no one speaking or acting on their behalf. And there is no counselor among them who, if I ask, give an answer about the past or the future. They're all quiet. They're silent. Well, 27 is an example of how God can predict the future. Assyria coming. You know, like, so God is warned about the Assyrian invasion. He sent prophets, Micah and Isaiah, others, to warn them in advance. And just so it happened. The Assyrians did attack, vindicating God's impeccable word as true. So notice the Gentiles and Israel. There is no other God than the God of Israel, past, present, and future. Where does that leave the World Economic Forum or this sustainable development governs, goal sometimes? Whenever they or like them have made predictions about global climate change, equality of outcome, critical theories, to bring about unity, promoting sustainable energies, central planning for all, they kill the very planet that ostensibly they want to sustain. They have taken God's, via Isaiah's challenge, they have not taken, I would say, God's challenge to explain their gods, but their predictions are always wrong. So global warming or global cooling, which is it? You know, I lived long enough to find we've had both. Overpopulation growth, or is it underpopulation? We now have, with abortions on demand, now at the point of no return for humanity, ending the human race. By the way, that would be satanic design. If the whole world drops below 1.8, it cannot recover birth rate. So we have energy depletion, restricting natural resources and depending on renewables that kills humans in poor countries. They don't care. It kills people in poor countries because of food or lack of shelter, housing. You know, this last winter, European winter was really pretty good, but they were predicting thousands of deaths because of the lack of energy in Europe because of the pipeline shutdowns. Okay, where life, okay, that kills the renewables, that kills humans in poor countries where life cannot be sustained except in the most primitive of life. And then you have fewer and fewer of them, and they will die off. Windmills and solar panels are a net drain to economics and nature. Remember how bizarre and backwards this looks? But they say the price must be paid. Klaus Schwab says, you will be poor and be very happy. Yeah. Well, where does all this leave us? Fearful as idol worshipers? Well, we have no fear, God says. He said, do you not know? This is from our past lesson. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. His strength to the weary. He gives strength to the weary. And to him who lacks might, he increases power. Though your youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. But according to his promise, we are looking for the new heavens and new earth in which righteousness dwells. And I say, Maranatha. I think we need to have a real clear in our mind what's going on in our world today. There is idolatry going on out there. We just say, well, it's political. No, it's not. It may be politics means you'd use other people to do something. Yeah, that sense is political. But there is a conscious effort to dismantle what God has put together in the human race. And the building blocks of how societies are to function, whether it's free enterprise, personal owning of property, personal independence and responsibility, family values, what you call the nuclear family, mother, father, children, that's all being attacked from every word. And whoever thought that they could attack gender? you know, by just identifying, say, well, you know, the tree identifies as a dog. I guess we got to treat the tree as a dog now. It's so bizarre. It's our mind just can't even comprehend it. But this is what's to be accepted. And if it's not accepted, you are intimidated. And if you don't do it, they'll shut off your credit supply. I mean, just we're just so far. Now, I don't think it'll happen before the rapture. I think these are actual setups, I think, that will be blossom in the tribulation, because all these events we can see already happening in tribulation. Because right now, the Lord is here, the energy of the Holy Spirit restrains through us, and I don't mean we're campaigning, just that we sit here. That's enough that puts a damp on all of this, because we just don't, quote, vote the right way. So we sit here until we're removed, and then I think then all the floodgates will open up, because then the world will be in a panic situation and they'll grab at every straw they can to bring themselves back into power. And those that are the most powerful will grab to it and run with it and run the world, try to run the world with it.